Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Patrick Cavanaugh and Ross Kiewit, who set the unsupported Team FKT for Arizona's 60-plus mile-long Highline Trail, completing the route in 13 hours and 36 minutes. Patrick and Ross, thank you so much for coming on the show today to chat about the Highline Trail. I'm really excited to speak with you.
Thanks for the invite. We're excited to talk about this wild adventure we had.
First, I would love it if you could start out by describing what the Highline Trail is, like where it's at, how long it is, you know, just kind of the character of the trail itself and that sort of thing.
The Highline Trail is kind of in central Arizona, north of Phoenix. It's in the Payson Pine area. It basically follows the Mogollon Rim, which is just a big cliff, essentially, and that separates the northern Arizona high country from the desert of Phoenix and further south. So this trail is about 63-64 miles now. It's grown a lot longer over the last few years as it redone the trail. And it just kind of follows along the cliffs. And it's just a unique Arizona place with a whole lot different environment than you expect from Phoenix.
Yeah, no, it's with us being both Ross and I are located here in Scottsdale, Arizona area, or Phoenix, Arizona. And, you know, this area is an area that a lot of people here escape to get out of the heat. So it's kind of fun to link all of these areas together and you really get a vast difference of the climate that's out there, going from, you know, open desert, we're in the trees, a couple areas that you're just a lot of sun exposure. And then at the same time, there's, you know, river crossings where we got to go cross logs and things like that. So a lot of variability out there too. And then, like Ross said, there's a lot of work that was done on there, but it still holds true to kind of its, what everybody knows it as. It's just a lot of rocks and chunks that are still out there. And then with some of the additions and things like that they did, also a lot of switchbacks. We got to deal with a lot of those back and forth where we knew where the end was. We could kind of see the lights of the city of Pine. And it took us a lot longer at that end than we thought it was going to.
Yeah, definitely. So in between all those rocks and chunks, is it predominantly a single track or is there some road here? What's the trail underfoot like?
It's all single track. There's, I mean, all the way. They've redone it in the last few years, so it's a little wider than it used to be and not near as overgrown, but it's a real nice single track all the way for the whole 60 plus miles.
Yeah, that's actually a really long, solely single track trail. The first question I have about your guys' FKT is, why do it? Why did you guys decide to do this as an FKT? And also, why did you choose to do a team unsupported FKT?
I'm in a training block right now, so needed some long runs. And Ross is somebody that I lean on for a lot of adventures. He's kind of the guru of just throwing routes together and things like that. And he's taken me on a lot of adventures up in that Mogollon Rim area. And last year, I think it was actually that I paced him over at the Mogollon Monster 100-mile race. And so I've done a lot of the sections linking to it or touching it and all that. But taking that from end to end was a lot of fun on there. And it was also in the middle of a training block, so that helped out as well. And, you know, with him and I talking about it back and forth for a while here, there wasn't really a way that I was just going to go out there and do that myself. Might as well go have an adventure with a buddy. And, you know, he's a lot more knowledgeable on those trails. So also having his knowledge through that area of, you know, where to go, what to do. It was nice knowing when that next water stop was going to be because he knew where there most likely was going to be a stream. So that motivational support was great to have too.
Yeah, we do a lot of runs together and this is trail. I've done all the parts of it, but never all in one go. So it's something I've been wanting to do for a few years. And with his long race coming up, he suggested I was jumping at the opportunity. And we did it unsupported just because it's easier logistically. Don't have to get anyone else out there. And this trail is actually really good for it in Arizona. There's like really good water sources all the way along it. So it's not something we have very many places in the desert or anywhere in Arizona, so that made it easy to do as an unsupported. And so just fun. You load up your pack with a bunch of snacks, a water filter, and away you go. It's made for a good day.
Yeah, definitely. That's the best way to do it. I do have a question about the water. So I've only been on a portion of the Highline that is with the concurrent with the AZT. And I don't remember a ton of water. Can you talk about how frequent the water sources are and what type of water sources you're, are they all streams? Are they springs? Are they troughs? Where are you getting your water from?
Yeah, the Arizona trail side, the far western side is probably a little drier than the east, but most of the time it was less than 10 miles from water to water. And there's just creeks all along. And we did it kind of, I guess it was still winter, but felt more like spring. So there was a lot of, like every little small stream is flowing, not even just the normal ones you can count on in the summer. So never really had to go very far, but normally you'd maybe go 10 miles between the water. And yeah, they're all just streams and creeks. So.
And there's a lot of those too, where the normal crossing of going over just a couple rocks or things like that there would have sufficed. But just with the amount of rain that we've had and melting and everything, They were flowing real good for this FKT attempt. And that was, we got to work on our balance beam routine, you know, post Olympics and everything. So I think we're ready for LA, but it was plentiful water throughout the entire trip. I actually was going to start with a bigger pack. And then just with what I saw Ross starting with, I was like, yeah, let's lose a couple pounds of the bladder and things like that and just make it in one go.
I mean, obviously I hike a lot in the desert, but I predominantly am in the mountains of the Northwest. So when I think, oh, frequent water, I don't think 10 miles. I think more like every couple of miles. But then I'm talking to guys that run in the desert and you guys are like, yeah, every 10 miles, water's everywhere. And it is definitely like a different mindset.
Yeah, it definitely is. But that's why I like the Mogollon Rim so much. And even in the middle of summer, there's always going to be good water sources. So otherwise, you're... The desert, a lot of times, you'll start off with all of the water you're going to see the whole day. So.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No stranger to carrying a gallon or so of water. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of the logistics, obviously, because this is a point to point and you guys did it unsupported. So can you talk about, you know, your pickup and your drop off? Are you getting a shuttle? Are you doing two vehicles? Do you need permits for this? What are the kind of the logistics that are involved with doing the Highline Trail?
So we wanted to start early just to make sure we could have, well, one, we both drove up separate. So two car shuttle system that we did and met at the Pine Trailhead just right before Pine, Arizona. And so I think we started at 7 a.m. And so we had to leave our house probably around, I think it was like right around 5 a.m. or so to get on up there and meet at the finish line or the, I guess, the end of the trail. And then, yeah, hopped in the car together. I think it's about a 30 or so minute drive from that Pine Trailhead to the, was it 260 Trailhead is the start of it on there. So it's really nice because it's so accessible. Really easy to park at all those areas, especially when you're starting that early. You're not really fighting with the crowds in to get in there. And then, yeah, there's no permits, no nothing that's needed as you're going through there. So really made logistics easy. We made sure to have all the snacks and all the finish line drinks and food in the last car there, but really does boil down to making it a very simple logistically. And then, yeah, just left that night and got back. There was a lot of Red Bull and coffee and things like that at the end, because the drive back from Pine back to the Phoenix metro area is pretty windy and like all downhill, and definitely have animals and things like that. So we had to keep our wits to us. So yeah, just did a day out and back, and was really nice.
Yeah, and the Highline Trail has several trailheads along the way, so you can do shorter sections, or if you're going to do a supported or stashing water or food along the way, there's plenty of places you can access that are paved roads or really nice gravel. So it's really accessible trail, so that made it pretty easy to do it as we unsupported.
I was just wondering about the direction of travel, but maybe it's because you were just wanting to end closer to Phoenix or closer to the brewery in Pine. I'm not sure. Like, what was the idea with the like direction of travel?
with like the Mogollon race and also all that, it usually goes east to west, or even, you know, the other part is that you're starting in higher elevation and dropping in elevation. So it is a net loss going from east to west as well. I think you start at like 6,600 feet and finish at about 5,400 or so, but a lot of ups and downs throughout that entire piece. So that's where we decided that route. It also logistically made sense too with these sections. It makes it easy to drop if, you know, something would have happened to either one of us with the different trailheads that are throughout there, like parking spaces that you could pull off. There is the ability to do that. So yeah, that was, I think, my main reason behind it. And it just seemed like that was the direction everybody went. So if we're going to do this, might as well do it kind of as the group does.
Right.
Yeah, it was the way the previous holder, Josh, we know him pretty well. That's the direction he had done it. And it is slightly down that downhill, but really could be done either way. But it was a little shorter driving, I think, going that way. So that helped too.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was that much difference between the two trailheads. So that makes sense to go, obviously, as much downhill as you can.
We enjoyed it at the end. We appreciated that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely that drop down toward Pine is nice. Although I do know what you're saying about the switchbacks. Those didn't used to be there.
No.
Because I remember the first time I did that, it was just like, you went down. And then 2 years ago when I was doing the Arizona Trail the other direction, I was going up and I was like, why am I not getting there? Like, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, the new trail that they built is a whole lot more switchbacks. And that's why it went from somewhere out of, used to be around 50 miles. The old Zane Grey race was, they called it a 50 miler, but now it's, you know, close over 100K. So they keeps getting longer because you switch back down instead of going straight down the creek and straight back up is usually how the old route was.
I mean, there's definitely some value in that for sure. But when you're trying to get somewhere fast, it can be a little frustrating.
The light at the end of the tunnel was a little too figurative of the town's
totally.
Light and just getting any closer.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So can you talk a little bit about your fuel? We've talked a little bit about the water sources. So can you just talk about what you guys took with you as far as food and gear for this?
Kept it pretty simple. Did a Solomon 12-liter pack. I know I said I took the bladder out of there, but it's always nice to have that little extra room for things and but really didn't need it. And I don't really see the impact of the weight that much for, you know, 100K. So just use that and then a waist belt. So I had three water bottles. So one that I was just kind of filtering with throughout the entire time into other bottles. And then we'll just fill up that last one and go from there. And then it was a lot of liquid calories in the beginning. It's just easy to do. It's easy to count, you know, your calories, what you need to do over the hours or so. And then just had a lot of snacks. I wanted to test out some things just to see how they sat in my stomach. So a lot of like nut mixtures and things from just Trader Joe's. They had the prepackaged out, ready to go. Had that. One of my favorite go-tos of Scandinavian swimmers.
I just bought a bag of those today.
Yeah.
They're so good.
They're solid for these longer attempts. You know, there's a lot of times where we're hiking up the hills and things like that where it's just easy to eat. And gels get expensive, so didn't want to rely on those. And then the other thing, just there was a lot of coverage in like the first third and then, you know, the last third and getting into the nighttime, there's a lot of coverage, but just with that Arizona heat and that sun exposure, a decent amount of salt through most of that. And then, you know, one thing that we've learned being in the desert is anytime that there is a water crossing, just making sure you're dousing yourself in the water and staying cool. So did like a sun shirt, keep the sun exposure off of us. And then every creek that we went on filled up with water and then just drenched ourselves in water.
Yeah. Did the normal running nutrition, some gels, but then then some other like bobo bars and dried mangoes have kind of been my go-to the last few months and having a lot of those on long runs. And yeah, sun hoodies keep out of the sun. Even in February, it was sun in Arizona, still really warm. In the middle section is a lot less trees and a lot more sun exposure. So
we ran into that in the middle of the trail. Something went through and kind of bulldozed through part of the trail. So we were running through with like our Gaia map that we had pre-downloaded. And just being like, we're on the trail right here. Like, we're on it, but something went right on through there and took away a lot of the, you know, bushes or things like that that may have been there previously. So added a little bit of extra to sun.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about the weather at that time of year. The sun sounds like it's pretty intense. Was there still snow? Because I've been there in May and there was still snow and it was cold, like up at the top of the rim. So maybe not where you guys were?
This year's been not really much snow. So there wasn't any snow where we were at. I think a week before we did it, they had some snow, but it had been more like really warm and it all melted off. I'm sure there's still snow up on top of the rim on the plateau, but the high line stays below it the whole way. So it was mid-70s and sunny then.
Oh, okay.
We've tried to get on up there before, and it gets real muddy and sloppy up on the top, just like that, like change in temperatures and those pieces. So it did drop pretty quick, though, as you get into the nighttime. Just that desert air gets really cold really quick, but didn't have to deal with that too much. Also, starting at 7, sun was already rising, so we were pretty good for the whole route there.
Okay. So would this be what you like the best season is kind of that February time period? Is that kind of when you think the best season for this would be?
I would say most years probably not, but like March to April.
Okay.
And fall would be good, October, November, but it could be done most of the year. It doesn't get extremely hot there, but it does snow as well. I don't know, but it doesn't last too long when it does snow. I know Zane Grey raced a couple years ago in April, they got snowed on up there. So it really is kind of just dependent on what the weather's like right before, but it could be done most of the year.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, whenever I've been there, it's been very, very cold, but I've been there in like October and April. So, you know, it can be pretty cold.
The Arizona trail seasons.
So. Yes, exactly. So you talked a little bit about this, but I'd like to know maybe more detail about the navigation. You've talked about it being worked on and added length. You've talked about something kind of bulldozing down the bushes. I only know a little fraction of it, and that part's pretty well marked. So how is this thing marked? How are you guys navigating? I mean, you said you had it on Gaia. But overall, what was your navigation experience?
Most of it, I had no problem. It was just that one small section where the Forest Service is doing some sort of fuels treatment. It sounded, looked like they're grinding down a bunch of brush so you could hear the machine further down the hill. So most of the time, it's very well marked. There's blazes on trees. There's the like signposts and gates everywhere. So you know you're on the Highline Trail. But it's just that one small section we get to, and it just trail disappeared into like ground up mezzanita on the ground. So I had to kind of figure out where does the trail actually go from here. And then after a quarter mile, we were back on the trail and it was all good. I'm sure that'll be cleaned up soon with all the work they put in to the trail.
Yeah, and there's a couple times where the new and old trail are right next to each other and you're trying to figure out which one is which. So yeah, with him having it downloaded or us having it downloaded on our phones, you know, there's a couple times we're like, wait, which one is it again? Or like, is this a split off? Or, but for the most part, it was pretty straightforward. And most of those trails that will take you up over to the rim also are pretty well defined. And it's not, you know, something of like, you come to a split in the road and do I go right or left? It's usually like straight and then a right with us going east to west. You know, is that a right turn to go on up the hill?
Okay. Yeah. I feel like, especially when they're doing a lot of work on a trail, it can be very confusing when you come across multiple paths or, you know, the trail just kind of ends into the bulldozed area. So I just wondered if that was a challenge that you guys encountered. I guess you didn't probably run into that in the dark. Were you out in the dark or did you manage to do this only in the daylight?
We had a little bit of darkness at the very, very end. Probably what, the last 2 hours or so, hour and a half?
Yeah, it was about from like Geronimo to the finish. So the last 8 to 10 miles. And that section of the trail is one of the first parts they redid. So it was easy to navigate. The part where it was somewhere in the middle, kind of the Myrtle to Hell's Gate area.
Yeah, we had a little bit of deja vu because it was the section that I was pacing Ross for Mogollon Monster going through there. And it was at night as well for the race. So we're like, wait, which date are we on right now? Being out in the sun all day, wanted to be done. So
it felt like you'd been there before. How popular is the Highline Trail? Did you guys see very many people while you were out there?
I think I can count on one hand how many people we truly saw. We saw a decent amount of cars, probably 15 or so between the different parking lots as we went through there. But actual physical people, I'd probably say 5-ish or so, 4 to 5. Yeah, it was not busy at all once we got on the trail.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just not really the season for it. Like in the summer, it definitely will be busier when a lot more people are trying to escape the heat from Phoenix. This is a couple hour drive, so you get a lot more people up there then and
yeah.
Now.
I was about to say, we'll see here soon. It's supposed to hit 106 in Phoenix this weekend. So there'll probably be a couple people going up, 5,000 feet or so in elevation to get out of the heat.
So what about wildlife? Do you see any animals if there's not any people out there?
I'm still trying to figure out what this thing was that we saw, because we both saw out of like the corner of our eye, this white animal of some sort, like dart across. But it probably was also just we both saw it wrong or something, but some sort of deer or something going through there. But we didn't really see too much actual wildlife, but we saw a lot of like, I would say like the existence of wildlife out there. So okay. A lot of like elk tracks, a lot of deer scat, things like that out there, but nothing too wild that we can see. But yeah, there was a lot of activity that we just didn't see.
Yeah, we chased a couple cows for a little while. They just kept wanting to walk it down the trail in front of us and not get off. So. And yeah, other than that, no wildlife to say. I've seen a lot of wildlife out there over the years, from snakes, the bears, and elk, and everything.
Yeah, I feel like cows don't understand a perpendicular turn. They just have to keep going straight. And I'm like, just turn right. Just go over there, and I'll leave.
Yeah, there was one section that the last time we ran on the Highline Trail, we had a bear jump out in front of a friend going around a corner, and all of a sudden we saw her darting back at us. We're like, where are you coming from? What are you doing? And then so we were reminiscing about that of like, I'm just waiting, going around this bend and seeing some sort of bear just hucking it through all the wildlife there.
I definitely always see a lot of tracks in scat when I go through there, but I'm usually going through there when a lot of other people are there. So that's why I wondered if in the quieter season, you'd be seeing all the things that are clearly there, but hiding. So one of the things when I was researching this before our episode is that there's only like, you guys were only the third people to set a record on the Highline. And yet it seems like this would be, obviously there's a race. So maybe a lot of people that would be doing FKTs are doing a race, but this just seems like an appealing route, the length and the location and everything. So do you have any thoughts on why this isn't any more popular?
It's been something I wanted to do last few years. I thought it was, yeah, a cool route that should have more attention. And just never got around to it until now. But yeah, I don't know. A lot of people from Phoenix go up there to, run the trails in the summers, but just hasn't had much action as far as the FKT attempts, I guess.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising to me too when we were looking at that just on the FKT site itself of nobody really going for it. And I don't know if it does go to just people training for, races. They want to go up the hill as well, instead of just following the lower section of it. But then even during the summertime, it surprises me because like Ross said, you can do most of this year round, just as we did, maybe a little bit less water sources and things like that, or there'll be a little less flowing, but it's really surprising, especially from my door to the trailhead was like, I think it was an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So it's not from South Scottsdale to get up there is easy access and all that.
Yeah. I mean, it just seemed very surprising to me, but maybe now that you guys have been on the show and talking about it, we'll see some more people attempting.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of time left out there too. We're both just having a good time out there. We've talked about wanting to do it, like I said, in a training block. So it wasn't anything of trying to, you know, go for broke or anything like that. So I think that there's some of that. And then also, I think with all of the parking lots that are there too, it's very easy for people to crew. I mean, most of those drives are going to be 5-10 minutes or so in between each section. So if, you know, with us doing it unsupported, if somebody wanted to do supported, there could be a really stout time throwing down going that east to west.
Now that we're having you guys on the show and talking about this, if somebody is like, oh, hey, that sounds pretty cool, what sort of tips do you have for people? Obviously, you just mentioned the crewing, but any other tips you'd offer people who either want to come to an FKT or just want to come out and run it?
I think the biggest thing that for that is just making sure you have your fuel and the navigation down. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of turns. So as far as FKTs go, you know, it's pretty well marked. There's not a ton of people. So you're not, you know, on a really busy, high populated trail. So you're not trying to zigzag around anybody on those pieces. So from I guess 100K, it is a bit of a distance, but it's still very approachable and can be treated almost like a race that you and some friends just do over a day or so. So I think even just mapping those out of where those crosses are help out a ton. But even if you want to do this solo, like I still haven't seen a female one on there yet. So that'll be fun to see.
There's no women that have done this. I could go back to Arizona.
Yeah. Please come. Yeah. We'll be happy to crew and support too, as much as we can.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely a good route and easy access. I mean, good water sources. It's good to know what creeks have water, because it's Arizona. Not, it'll be a creek listed on the map and it'll be bone dry. So
yes,
there are kind of the main ones, you know, that will always have water that you can count on.
Yeah, the maps cannot be trusted.
It says creek or spring, it may or may not have water.
Exactly.
Plus, like you said, at the end of the trail too, there's the City of Pines, so you got plenty of food and everything to consume post race too, or post run. So it's a good trail to kind of do and then finish as well and have some fun. Plenty of places to stay too up there, so you don't have to try to, you know, drive back to that area. There's plenty of places to stay up in Pine.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when you said you drove back, I was like, I would have just been sleeping in the back of my car. I would not run 100K and then drive an hour and a half. I'd be like, I'm done.
I thought that on the way back. That would have been definitely the better move, but new dog at home, didn't want to leave my wife with all of those duties.
Fair. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show and chatting about this with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thanks again, Patrick and Ross, for coming on the show. You can read about their FKT on the website, fastestnoontime.com, and follow their adventures on Instagram. Patrick can be found at Kavanaugh B, and Ross is at KiwiR.